You're listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hochheiser-Ilkovich. And today I'm here with Leslie Jane Seymour, who is the CEO of Covey Club. And we are going to talk all about her amazing journey, her career, and how she got where she is today. So welcome, and thank you so much for being on our podcast.
Wonderful to be here. Love New York Wiki. It's great.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your support. We start this podcast by asking all of our guests the same important question, which is, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing women in the workplace today?
You know, you and I were talking off camera and off microphone earlier about this balance. And, you know, I'm so hoping that COVID, the changes required by COVID will give all of us more balance, not just the women, though it always fell on the women in the past to make the balance happen. But, you know, the men who really would like more balance as well. And we can't go back to what it was. We can't go back to this grind all the time and not feeling like we're giving the best of ourselves to each thing. It's impossible to do. It's not possible. And, but this is what we're stuck with. So, you know, it's funny when my daughter asked me, you know, like, what's my biggest regret about, all my years working, I say every morning I had to get up as an editor in chief of magazines. I had to wash and blow my hair. Don't laugh, everybody listening, put on my makeup, wear a fancy outfit, high heels I lived in the suburbs, up the, you know, macadam driveway to the train. I mean, all that. And sometimes just to sit in an office, no one saw me. I didn't talk to anybody. I talked to two people on my staff and I would leave. Like, I think we're in such a better place for women to actually have their voices heard in terms of how do we make this hybrid thing work? You can be more efficient. You can have more life balance. You don't have to feel this constant regret and constant horribleness about not having enough time for you or your family. So I think that's still a huge, giant issue.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. I mean, we were just talking about the whole, like, the commute and the extra time of it all. I think it's interesting, I love that you use the word balance and not like work-life balance, because we're talking here always about this circular balance. But like, so many companies are requiring some sorts of arbitrary returns to office that sometimes they make sense and sometimes they don't. And it's just, I'll be so interested to see where all kinds of shakes out in the next year or two, because there's so many benefits to working from home, to not using that time to get ready in the morning, to schlep in.
Yes. The amount of productive time that you now have that you would have been sitting on a train and, you know, chatting with people. I mean, yes, we have the other deficit, of course, which is happening, which is people are feeling more disconnected, more lonely, more, you know, there's less connection. So we have to figure out how to get around that. But in terms of, you know, what you give to your work, I fully believe, like, you know, if Covey Club ever gets big enough to have an office space, I wouldn't do it. I would do four times a year. This is what I've thought about. If we ever got big enough to have that kind of money, I would just do four retreats a year and come up with three really interesting days of connecting, getting work done, all that. You don't need an office anymore. Yeah. Guess what? For most businesses, we don't need to just sit there, but you do need those interactions. You do need those connections. You need the mentoring. We have to figure all that out. I especially feel that way for younger people. They definitely need to not be so isolated, and they need to be in the view and the, you know, sort of the path of people who can help them get to the next level. I don't know how we solve that, but I think that's solvable. And I think, just the productivity, I feel so much more productive if I just get up, I have my breakfast, and I sit down and start working. Right. Instead of running for the train and missing the train and like this, you know, and the train door doesn't open and the, you know, you're feeling sick and then you can't get into the bath. I mean, like, just like all these distractions where you can sit down, you can spend that next hour and a half and work.
I know. I mean, it's more productive, so actually, right?
I think so. Well, they found through COVID, most of the research that I did, they found an increase in productivity, not a decrease. So I still don't understand, other than the companies have already made huge investments in real estate, that they have to have people in. And of course, there's corporate culture and blah, 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 blah. But I think, I bet you a lot of those companies that spend all that money on real estate, if they were given the option now to do it a totally different way, I don't know that they would do that.
Right. No, totally think you're right. Yeah. It's like, we're still dealing with some old school situations and thinking that are influencing what's going on. I want to talk about your incredible career, your incredible journey. You were an editor-in-chief at many magazines, including Marie Claire, and now you're the CEO of Covey Club. Can you walk us through that path? So as early as you want to start, if you want to start with your important, you know, jobs in high school that shaped you or your internships or whatever. But I'd love to talk about how you got to where you are today.
And of course, you know, the paths are different today. I'll just talk about the things that I see as threads that people today can still pull on. I always wanted to be a writer. That's all I hoped to be. That was it. I used to write books about my parakeet. I just dreamed of being a writer. I think I thought I would like write novels or something, but I just loved to write. That was it. So my goal was to figure that out however I could. And I was actually, my parents were in the science field. I was never going to be a doctor. I'm too squeamish. Found that out very early. My dad's a doctor. I can't look at any of those things. My daughter's now a dentist and she wants to show me all these gory pictures. And I'm like, no, don't, that's why I didn't do this. Don't even show it to me. It makes me sick to my stomach. And so I knew I wanted to do something in science. I had had a wonderful summer at the Coney Island labs as a summer intern. And I loved dissecting fish and all that stuff. That was great. So I thought, let me go to school where I can, you know, I always knew I'd write in the background. Maybe I'd write about science, whatever. So I ended up at Duke thinking I would be a marine biologist. And I found very quickly that I'd gone to a girls' school. I'd taken my math. I'd taken my science. I'd got all A's. But that when I got into these big, general classes with 300 people, there were a lot of guys who had 3 years of math, not one, you know. They were just outpacing me and I was struggling. And I was like, okay, I go into writing class, I get an A. I go into science, I get a B. Where do you think my future is in my 20s? So I chose the A's. And I was like, okay, let me switch over. My parents were horrified. I became an English major in my last 2 years. And what was really interesting is I started with an internship in the local newspaper, which is still there. It was the Durham Herald. And I didn't like the school newspaper. I wrote for them a little bit back in the day. That was in the 70s. Everybody was there were a lot of druggies in there and they were like, they hated everything. They were negative. I've never been that kind of person. I'm not negative. So I was like, I did a few things for them. I was like, this is not for me. I'm not anti-culture. And I love going into real life and, you know, you'd go into the newspaper and there are guys with, you know, coffee stains on their ties and they would like send me down to the Northgate Mall and say, you know, interview people about why the Christmas tree went up right after Halloween and everybody's all upset. And I would go into the union, the student union for lunch. And there would be those days, believe it or not, people sold papers. That's how they got their news. There'd be two banks of papers and you could buy a New York Times or whatever. And then next to the New York Times, there'd be the local newspaper and they would have had an AP story about Jimmy Carter shaking hands with Brezhnev or whatever. And next to it is my story about the Northgate Mall Christmas tree. And I was like, wow, like this is really crazy. I can be like this is like Hollywood. Like people would be like, wow, that's so cool. Look at what you're doing. And I was like, yeah, I like this. And there was the woman who was the fashion editor of the Washington Post was there on a fellowship, and I went to one of her meetings and told her I wanted to be a writer and how would I get into newspapers. And, you know, I said, I love fashion. I don't know anything about it. I can tell you my whole history by what I wore, but I can't claim I never made clothes or whatever. And she said, well, I have a friend, you know, up at Women's Wear Daily, a trade paper is a good place to start. Anyway, she sent me up there. I met them. They loved me. And this is the real lucky break for me is something that I cannot explain. They liked me and they let me start stringing for them my senior year while I was at Duke. I started writing for Women's Wear Daily. I had no connections. You know, I wasn't a fancy family. They just liked me. And I was, you know, stringing for them and got off the plane after graduation and worked for them for 2.5 years, went over the daily news. They did an evening paper that failed and we were all out on the street. I was looking for newspaper jobs. They were closing up then. A girl at Women's Wear Daily had gone over to Harper's Bazaar as a copywriter and she kept calling me and I didn't want to be a copywriter. It was too slow. Anyway, I couldn't get another job. I finally went to Harper's Bazaar. I was there for a year and a half. Then I got called by Vogue and I ended up at Vogue for 9 years. And then I left there, had a baby, decided I wanted to go back to a different environment. Went to Glamour as their beauty editor for 3 years. And then went left for a second baby and decided I really wanted to run the show somewhere and landed my first editor-in-chief job at YM. I don't know if anybody remembers Young Miss.
I love YM.
That was so much fun.
I had to fangirl. I also was a teen magazine editor, but I was a YM reader and I love,
It was so much fun. Favorite. The company was so cheap. We didn't have air conditioning. We had fans. Yes, in a big New York building. And when I invited the guy who'd been the publisher of Glamour, his daughter wanted an internship and I brought her over to the building. He was horrified. He was like, you don't have air conditioning. I'm like, no one cared. You know, we were running around. We were having a great time. It was just so silly. We had so much fun. I went there. Then Hearst called me. I went over to Redbook and then to Marie Claire and then to Moore magazine. And then when Moore closed, really was the end of magazines, really. You know, people were being fired every quarter, you know, like Time Inc. was laying off 400 people at a time. Each company was laying off hundreds of people. It was, you know, it just, the business was changing. Facebook and Google ate the lunch of the magazine business and the magazine people on the business side weren't smart enough to figure out how to counter it. And they let it happen. And that's why you have no magazines left. And my readers were really upset when Moore closed, which was in 16. And they came to me on social media the day we closed and said, do something else for us. And I didn't really know what that meant, but I'm a really good researcher. I gave them a survey, don't laugh, for those of you in research, 54-question survey. And believe it or not, 627 of them actually finished it to the end. And I built Covey Club from that. I thought I was going to be doing a digital publication. I quickly discovered that was untenable. I was paying the same rates for articles as Vogue was. I ran out of money really fast. And no one would pay me for it. So I had to figure out what else it could be. Covey is a small group of birds. And I always knew it would be a club. I always knew that I wanted to create something because really publishing magazines were a club of sorts. Magazines were a group of sorts. We didn't spend time getting to know you as a subscriber, but you knew us and you would, you know, write into us. I was one of those people that always responded to every letter in the olden days, letters, emails. That was who I always considered to be my, you know, my boss. And so I was like, okay, let me lean into the club part of this. What does this mean? And I didn't really know what that meant. I was just like, okay, I love doing these onstage interviews. And at that point, no one was using Zoom. I had to teach my members how to use Zoom. Zoom had just started. And I would do these like interviews with interesting people who had books or experts or whatever. And then a friend of mine came along who was a writer and she used to be having these, she still does,
has these big retreats where she teaches people to write. And she said, well, I'm going to do this as a workshop. And I said, I don't think they're going to like a workshop. She goes, just leave it to me. I know how to do this. So I hung around, watched what she did. And she said, okay, now for 10 minutes, you're going to write this, blah, blah, blah. And they all like sat and wrote the thing. And I was like, oh, like I can do this. That's so cool. So then what we did is we sort of leaned into that. And now Covey is a community of women who help. We all come together. And what we say is Covey Club holds a space for you while you figure out what's next. And we're for women 40 plus. Some people are in their late 30s. They find that they're going through a transition. And it can be a transition of any sort. It can be empty nest. It can be widowhood, divorce, losing a job, health crisis, any kind of change that you're finding where you feel like you're stuck or you feel like you have to rethink or reorient. It's a lot of sort of getting started again in a new direction. Also, when we are about bonding and connecting and helping each other. We are a very tight community. These are really highly successful women. It's not every woman, but all these women that come to Covey Club, they are there to share. They're sharing their expertise and they're there to learn. They're open on both ends and we do it for each other. People come in to Covey Club saying, I'm stuck. I'm done with what I've been doing. I've been doing this for 30 years. I've reached the top. I know there's something else for me. I don't know what that means. I have to go further, but I'm lost as to what that could be. I don't see it. And they come out like 2 to 3 years later going, I've got 3 offers. I got to go back to my pod people and ask them which one I should take. You know, it's like, it's really lovely. Everybody has a different path. We offer friendship and business both, because when you get to a certain age, you can do business with friends. A lot in corporate life, they tell you not to do that. I think some of the best businesses come out of friendships as you get older. Maybe it's because you know who you are more than when you're younger. But I also think it's a very male thing to say that, you know, don't mix business and pleasure. I don't believe that at all. And we support each other through all kinds of life's changes. And we do challenges now where we work for a month together on a project. It could be a reinvention project. We did a fabulous group in January where people started out, some people wanted to do decluttering. They started out decluttering their linen closet and ended up working on their wills. Another girl ended up writing a poetry book in the month. People did all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, when you are in a community with other people, it's huge. And then of course we have Vivek Murthy, the Surgeon General, coming in and talking about loneliness and how this, I mean, loneliness and disconnection takes years off your health. And as you start to get older, I mean, he said that it's, you know, the equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes a day is to not be connected. And that's what we do. Like, I'm in the process of saying, I want to talk to people in HR about how, you know, Covey Club can solve that problem. And it moves you forward in your career. It moves you forward in your friendships. It moves you forward in understanding who you are. This is a long journey. We have many sides of us and we're going to live a long time. The key is to live a really healthy, happy second half. Not a bitter, angry, unhappy, you know, and we're all going to run into, there's going to be barriers. There are going to be barricades. There's going to be pitfalls. There's going to be, you know, earthquakes that happen and we can't control those, but we can control how we respond to those things. And when we do it together, it's much easier. And when you have other women like you, who you can call up and say, I think I'm about to lose my job. What do I do? That's a big thing, you know, and we bring in experts every week. We teach twice a week we bring in experts of all sorts. You know, do you want to get on a board? We bring in, you know, fabulous teacher from Columbia Business School. You know, we bring in people to talk about meditation and how to relax yourself, how to repackage your talents from a previous job into your future job. But, you know, during COVID, we even did things like, you know, sourdough baking. We do all the trends and, you know, we'll do beauty, we'll do menopause, we do fashion. Just think of what More Magazine, which was the last magazine that I did. We did everything. And we kind of do everything because all those things might inspire you. You might be a doctor, but it might be, you might be listening to what a fashion person does for her business, how she turned being a fashion editor into, you know, now doing people's closets. That may trigger something for you that you say, oh my God, I can take that concept and apply it to medicine. The ideas come from the bigger outer rings of what you're interested in. That's what we've definitely learned. Is if we all stick, like if I just stayed and talked to publishing people, my life, I can't do that because I'm an omnivore. I like to meet everybody and I like different things and I like to explore. But a lot of people get very narrow cast and buried in with one group, right? Which is fabulous. Publishing people are amazing. But what's so great about Covey is I'm meeting lawyers and doctors and filmmakers and podcasters, and the mix is where ideas happen.
That's so fabulous. And who's putting together the programming? Who's actually doing the planning and executing of the programming?
I do that. We have a very tiny group. We have a part-time editor. We have a part-time VA. It's always been a business. We've been successful since day one. But you know, we're in the scale moment now. We're 6 years old and you know, we do charge, because we do believe that, and we have seen that when we were doing things for free, people didn't attend. They didn't really show up. They were just hitting a button. When people pay for something, they actually value it more and they actually participate, and you do have to participate. And so we do the programming. We're very, now that's a good part is having been an editor in chief of so many magazines. This is all second nature. I know how to create content. I know, you know, we have a coveyclub.com. We bring in fabulous writers who write about anything to do with midlife. It's reinvention, it's menopause, it's grief, it's loss, it's divorce, it's elder care. It's all those things. We have essays, we have downloads, we have how-tos. We talk about the unretirement. A lot of us don't want to retire. We're just going to keep going. We talk about older children, and we talk about the tougher things in life too. But what I've always done is, I talk about things that nobody else wants to talk about. So some of our best articles, there's one, which is called when a good daughter doesn't want to take care of her aging mother. And, a friend of mine who's a well-known writer did it anonymously because her mother is still alive, but her mother was horrible. She was a bad mother to start with. And as she aged and got older and got Alzheimer's and everything, she was mean and it was really hard. And what was really interesting is the number of comments, you know, we got some of these, you know, comments from people saying, you know, God's going to strike you dead for not loving your mother. But then I had to put the suicide hotline link in several times because people said, this is my story. Yeah. She was a terrible mother. She's horrible now. She's, you know, this is killing me. And everybody tells me I should be really, you know, thankful I can do this. So we talk about those hard things. We don't pretend.
No, it's incredible. Congratulations, I should say, on creating this amazing community. And my next question is about the pivot. So taking this pivot that you have and actually even inspiring so many women to do the same, in terms of, you know, career pivots and life pivots, what are some of your like key pieces of advice that you've learned from your personal experience through Covey Club, like people who are looking to make those changes? What are some of, you know, what are your pieces of advice about life and career pivots?
Well, I think, you know, I also have a podcast, which is called Reinvent Yourself with Leslie Jane Seymour. And it's over 200 women that I've interviewed. And it's very interesting after you get into the hundreds of talking to people. And I talk to some famous people, but I'm not focused on famous people. I'm talking to people like you and me. How do they really do it?
what do? They sell their house in order to do it? Do they, you know, do they go into debt? Do they leave town and go somewhere else? Do they, what do they do to repackage themselves and come out again on the other side? And everybody again has a different path and a different way of doing it. People are scrappy in general, but I will tell you overall, it is so inspiring because everybody comes from a different background. Some people have more money or less money, more fame, less fame, more experience, less experience, support, no support. You know, it, they come from everywhere and they come from all different angles. And the overall things that hold them back are they see, they have a vision of where they want to go. They believe in the vision. They really can project themselves into the future and say, this is where I want to be. This is what I want to do. They have an open mindset. If you know anything about mindset research, there's something called a closed mindset and an open mindset. A woman named Carol Dweck did all the original research. If you Google that, you can find it. You can change your mindset. People with a closed mindset think this is the way it is. This is the way it always was. Nothing can change. An open mindset is always exploring, learning, finding new ideas that excite them. And that open mindset, and there are some people with such open mindsets, and I'm really digging into this now. I'm really trying to figure it out because I just interviewed somebody this morning where they have, they literally see every day. And this one woman had said this to me a long time ago when I asked her this question about what's the key to this whole thing, being successful at pivoting and finding the next thing that you want to do. She said, you have to keep your eyes open to see all the reinvention possibilities that life throws at you every single day. And it sounds crazy and wacky, especially if you're sitting on the other side saying, I'm like in a hole here. I've been doing the same thing. It's not working anymore. What do I do? How do I get out of here? There are people who can see this, and I'm really pushing some of them now to like dissect for me. How do you see this stuff? I think it's a little bit of, you know, every day we pick up, like I have my iced tea glass here. We pick up the thing and go, gee, you know, why can't a straw should be, you know, you should be pulling up sparkles instead of just the iced tea in the straw. And somebody says, you know, if that could have been done, somebody would have done it, right? Or they say, well, I wonder how that would work. And then somebody hops online and that's how these things are born. But there are people who literally see this everywhere and they don't shoot themselves down and they don't end the discussion and they don't stop it and they don't. And these are, you know, it's literally like seeing ghosts in a weird way. Like you have to train your mind to see all those things. And it has to do with journaling. There are all kinds of ways that you can do this. But you have to believe, I want to address the age issue because we do talk to women 40 plus. The average age of the women in the club is 54. It's late 30s, all the way up into 70s and 80s. And you have to have that spirit of sense of life is an amazing adventure. And it's a journey. It is not an end point. And through learning and through connecting and through asking questions and through sometimes failing, trying things, failing at things, that's how you learn and that's how you move forward. And if you have that constant sense of, this is so interesting, I'm so curious. One of the words people use a lot is if you have a sense of curiosity about the world, you can keep moving forward. And age is just a number. I will tell you that I'm 66 now, and I've never been happier in my life ever. And yes, you know, are there things I don't like that are happening? You know, yes, when I do downward dog, don't look at the things that are hanging off. It's pretty scary and gross, but you know what? I'm here. There are a lot of people that are not here. They didn't make it. I'm grateful. And I'm grateful for the fact that I can still keep learning and that I can meet such interesting people like I got to meet you today. it's a beautiful, wonderful, interesting time of life, but you have to have that open mindset mm-hmm. about it and constantly look at it as a journey. Doesn't mean you're not going to get knocked back. Doesn't mean that. You're going to get over those barricades and keep going no matter what. And you have to have connections. You have to have relationships. You have to be with other people that can support you. You cannot do this all alone. It's not a lonesome job.
It's a beautiful way to think about life, but also some very, bite-sized pieces of advice and actionable things to do in terms of keeping an open mind, networking. Like, I hope people listening to this podcast who want to, make that pivot, I feel like it is not hard to at least keep an open mind. You don't have to necessarily jump into your next thing immediately, but to not be closed off sounds like it's really the way to go.
In fact, I will tell you from all the people I've listened to, some of the do's and don'ts are, don't take the first thing that shows up after you've left whatever you were doing or lost whatever you were doing. That's usually not a recipe for success. You may churn through a couple of next items. You don't want to do that. You need to take a respite. People really talk about taking 6 months, 3 months. I generally go around the country talking about why you need to have a reinvention plan in your back pocket, no matter what. I get pushback from some people who say like, oh, but I've been with my bank for 23 years. It's fabulous. They love me. I'm like, it's not about you. Look at what happened out in California where the bank went bankrupt on Friday. These things happen. It's not to do with you. They can love you. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the way the world is and things roll along. You need to have a year's salary in your back pocket so that you can move if you have to move along. You can spend it on something. I did that with my with Covey Club. I took my severance pay, told my husband, that's what I'm doing with it. I'm going to invest it in Covey. And you need to have that ability. If you never have a disruption in your life, good for you. Go buy yourself a big fat car or the diamond or something like that. Beautiful jewelry. But you will be disrupted.
Yeah.
You will be. It just is. We're living longer. We're working longer. Things move at a rapid pace now. You know, I did an analysis one time. You know, my husband's father had one job. And he lived that job, he retired at that job, and that was it. And then when you look at our generation, I had 12 or something. And then you look at my children's thing there, my son's in his 30s, they're expected to have like 20 jobs. I mean, these things are moving faster, right? They're moving faster. Things come, they go. Look at what's happening in the tech sector. Like, did you ever think you'd see layoffs at Google? Never, right? Never in your life.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's like things change so rapidly. Or, I mean, speaking of someone who says like, oh, I never want to leave my job, like leadership changes and you don't like it anymore. Yes. Like things can change so rapidly to be prepared for. I mean, we've actually never talked about it that much on this podcast, but I love that we're talking about it because just being prepared that it could happen. And like you said, if it doesn't, great, like, cool. Nice, you are so lucky. Right. But to be prepared to have the option to make the move. It's just like so much freedom also when that situation comes that you're not stuck.
And the preparation should be something that you have been working on. You need to have more than your job and your family. You need to always have other interests out there that might one day be something for you that could be a possible, maybe they're hobbies, but that could possibly turn into your next act, whatever that might be. It could be, you know, a lot of these next acts start with, you know, a jewelry class at the local high school. I know people who've done that. I mean, and these are businesses that actually get off the ground and do stuff. You know, it can be things that you learn on vacation. You can take vacations where you actually study things that you think you're interested in. You can go back to school and get a degree while you're having your full-time job. I did that. I got a degree in sustainability management up at Columbia. I thought that's what I was going to do next. It took me 6 years. I did it at night. It was hard. But I loved Columbia. I loved being with the younger generation. It was great. I actually learned a lot more tech at Columbia than I did working at my magazine jobs, because a lot of the magazine companies were so far behind that I learned a tremendous amount. A lot of the tech that I use in Covey Club, I learned at Columbia. And I haven't used my sustainability degree yet, but I'm holding it for the future. Right now, Covey Club's very busy, so I don't use it. But those are all kinds of things. I thought what I would do is I thought the magazine would close. I would have two more years and I would go into the beauty business. I love beauty. I love the beauty business. The beauty business was having a terrible time, still is, with sustainability. And really, sustainability is what the environmental sciences have become. So it kind of looped me back to what I wanted to do originally as a marine biologist. So I have that degree. I can do it at some point. Maybe I'll do something voluntarily down here in New Orleans. I don't know yet.
How but beautiful that came back to your original.
Isn't that crazy?
I love that.
But those are the places to look. One of the things we say, again, we have a lot of articles on the site, but one of the things that we tell you when you're trying to figure out what it is you want to do next is we recommend that you get we call it a kitchen cabinet together, and you pull together, if you have friends from high school, if you have friends from college, if you have friends from early work, you sit them down and you literally take a whiteboard and you ask them, you know, how would you describe me? See what the words are that they come up with and see if that fits with where you are now. What were my interests? And you're going to whiteboard those. I mean, we have it all on the site, so you can find all this. But you're trying to look for threads that you might have dropped when you were younger. You know, we all took ballet when we were 5 years old. I thought I was going to dance, you know, in the ABT, right? I'm a klutz. Not going to happen. But if I still loved ballet and I was an accountant, maybe at this stage in my life, I could go and be an accountant for the ABT, right? And I know people who've done that. But you can pull on those old threads. And that's literally where I had, you know, I always had this love of environmental science. I had gone to an event. It was a Duke alumni event where the head of the environmental school came to speak. And I was in the throes. It was very clear that publishing was in rocky stage. And I'd done 4 magazines as an editor in chief. I didn't want to do another one because I knew it was only going to be 2 years or 3 years. And then that was going to go through tragedy again. Right. And I couldn't take it because I love magazines. And I thought, okay, that's really interesting. Like, my heart still beats for that thing. It really kept me up all night. I was like, how do I do this? How do I get involved with this again in a way that's meaningful? And so I had a girlfriend who was at L'Oreal who had just gotten her degree. And I pulled her aside and I was like, can I do this? What do I do? She was like, yeah, go up and I'll introduce you to the guy. Go sit in on a class, see what you think. And I went up there, sat in a class, and I was like, wow, like, this is fun as an adult. I love going back to class. And so I applied. I was like, I'll never get in. And then I got in and I was like, how am I going to go? I've got a full-time job. How am I going to do this? And I went and I loved it. And I had this 2 lives going on. I didn't even tell my staff for the first year because I didn't want them to panic because I was going off and doing something else. Because it would have been a sign that, like, holy moly, where are we headed?
Right.
But one fed the other. And I found that even though I was so frustrated with the magazine business, and, you know, when you're in the magazine business and all these disruptions are happening, and you go to your boss and say, well, what about this? Why don't we try this? Why don't we try that? And everybody's going, no, we can't do that. We can't do that. We can't do that. And you're like, okay, we're in turmoil and you don't want to try anything. This is so frustrating. And what I found is it took all the frustration out of it because I was learning, I was growing, I was asking questions there that people were interested in answering, I was exploring. So if my bosses didn't want to learn anything new about magazines, I couldn't help them, but I could go off in this other direction. And that energy is what actually made me have my best 2 years of editing or 4 years of editing ever. I did things I would never have done. I took chances I would never have taken. We had Mrs. Obama guest edit an issue of More magazine and made history in the process. Nobody had ever had a sitting first lady guest edit anything. And so like I did my best work ever. I meant them to be completely separate, like separate tracks, nothing to do with each other. And one, it became a release valve for me. I was so frustrated. And it just made my other job, I was like, okay, I'll stay at this other job because I knew if I left More, there were 50 other people in ads in every other place. They would just close it down. Like we were, you know, we were teetering on the edge always because we didn't fit in with the Meredith brands, which were at that point very, very Midwest and gigantic, and we were not. And so I was like, okay, this is my day thing and here's my night thing.
It's really impactful to hear you talk about this because, you know, I think so many people think about, like, quote unquote, the people on the podcast can't see my air quotes, but side hustle. And yes. I think that feels like very, like too much, like a job or something that's going to turn into absolutely, you're trying to make it turn into a job versus what you're talking about, where you can do something that will help your, could help your career. But also, I mean, I always talk about this podcast, like, you know, this is not my full-time job, but I always say, like, I use a different part of my brain, kind of what you're saying, in a way that is so vital to my overall, when we talk about balance or happiness or anything. And it allows me to be, you know, thoughtful and creative and just using parts of my brain that I'm not necessarily using day to day that just will help keep an open mind, I think.
Oh, and exercising that other part of your brain is so important, especially as you get older, because it's where the creativity comes from. The creativity comes from exercising those other parts of your brain. You get to a point where you know how to do your job. You can do it in your sleep and your other part of your brain goes dead. And I absolutely felt it was, you know, it was exercise. I mean, like, you should see me getting in there with, you know, have like when the guy started talking to me about, you know, joules and figuring out how many, you know, pounds per square inch. I was like, you're talking to me about this. Like, I'm okay with math, but I haven't done it in a long time. Like, you serious? We're going to do this. And, but I got through it and the stretching of the brain was so incredible. Yeah. It was absolutely amazing. And it awoke other sides of my brain. And you're totally right. Exactly that. I mean, I did think I was going to get this degree and then segue over into the beauty business. Right. So I did have it as a concept. Cubby Club came up at the last minute. I mean, I was thinking what else, you know, if More was to die, what, this is such a fabulous community and the idea is still great. They just didn't want to look at it in a new way. Like, why can't it be something else?
Right.
And so I didn't know it was going to be this, but that's kind of what it became.
No, it's great. Again, open mind. I think it's all about the open mind, like you said.
Yeah.
I know we have a few minutes left and I want to make sure we get to our lightning round where we'll dive right in. So I'm just going to say a few things, ask you a few quick questions. So what is the best job that you've ever had?
Wow. I had so many fabulous jobs. I have to tell you, being editor in chief of all of them, YM, Red Book, Mary Claire, More. I got to travel the world. I used to say that it was Hollywood for non-actors. I got to walk the red carpets. I got to hang out with celebrities. I got to literally travel around the world. You know, with Mrs. Obama, I was the, what is it called? It's the pool reporter in Cambodia when she was launching her Let Girls Learn project. I mean, you can't get a better job than that. And I didn't have to get on stage and do anything. I just had to do what I do well, which is I gather people, I inform them, and I listen to them and I help them find what they're looking for. So all of those jobs were extraordinary. I mean, you know, even as a writer, when I was writing at Vogue and, you know, exploring things, I mean, what a great thing to be able to, I'm a learner. I guess I'm just a voracious learner. So even when I was writing, I was always learning something. You know, as a reporter, you go out and you learn about something and then you teach other people about it. That's a fabulous job for somebody who loves to learn. And I got to work with incredibly creative people and people who you would say, you know, the really interesting part for me was the friction between being a words person and a visual person, which when you would say to somebody, when you were paired up with, I had some incredible art directors. My art director for Moore was just extraordinary. Like you would say, well, here's the idea for the story. Here are the articles. And when you have somebody who's so creative and so understands what you're doing and you just hand it off to them, and then you come back a week later and they surprise you. It's like a birthday party every time. You're like, oh my God, I didn't think of it like that. And they show you this visual interpretation of what you could only put into words. Like I could never, I can say what I like, but I could never say, you know, show a woman with a, you know, a clock on her face for, you know, like I, but when you, you have this person who can do that, it's just, it's so joyful. It's like, wow, this like thing goes from down here, like you've done your best job. And when you have an okay art director, they add to it. They do a nice illustration. But when you have somebody who's as creative as you and as talented as you, you take this thing up a whole nother level. And it's like, that's unbelievable, you know? And I was so joyful to come in there and go, wow, this is the visual interpretation of this idea. And that's really exciting. I miss that. I miss that. That was really, really exciting.
Did you, how was the transition at the end of your magazine career when just, I was just thinking about when you talked about the glamour. I mean, it really was like, I mean, I worked in magazines until 2011 even, and it was still pretty glamorous. How was that when you left? Was that, did you miss that? Was that a hard transition away from that?
Yes.
Like, you know, what was that like?
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, I've always loved fashion. I've always loved beauty. You know, it's always wonderful to say, oh, I feel like I want a new, what's the new color lipstick? And you walk into the beauty closet and you pick out one. And, you know, there's a lot of glamour like that. You go, you know, you're traveling to the collections. You're, you know, I mean, there, just think Hollywood for non-actors. It's so huge. And now you're back down to being a civilian. You know, I'm a civilian again. I mean, look at me. I'm sitting here in my workout top and my shorts and my hair pulled back. I don't have an ounce of makeup on me. And it's like, that's my new life. And it's okay. And when we moved down to New Orleans, that was one of my reinventions, leaving the New York suburbs. You know, I cleaned out my closet and I gave away a lot of those fancy suits and fancy handbags and fancy. I still have some of the shoes. You can't really do much with shoes you've worn. But what am I going to do with all that? It is a different world. And, but I was ready for that. I had done so much. I will tell you that I knew I was done when we did the magazine with Mrs. Obama. It got 6.5 billion hits around the world because the president wrote an essay for us. I mean, all of her, you know, connections did everything. I mean, it was huge. And she came to speak at the museum. We had an event for 150 people and we invited Robin Wright, who had done House of Cards about, you know, being first lady. And I had the two of them backstage and I was announcing, I was getting ready to announce, you know, to welcome everybody. And I look over my shoulder and we've got the whole room filled and it's flowers and it's publicity and photographers and the first lady. And I look over them and they're two are like giggling with like two little teenagers next to me. And they're going, oh, I'm so excited to be here. And I looked and I literally did this. I went with my hands and I went click. And I said, that's it. I'm done. Like what can I do that? And I've done things, you know, collected things for gun control and brought them to the Congress. I mean, I've done so many things that magazines allowed me to do. I'm just an ordinary girl. And I got this opportunity to do all this stuff. And really when I, you know, magazines were struggling, I got Mrs. Obama to do this thing. I traveled around the world with her to watch this launch. I wrote about it. And now I'm standing next to these two very famous, amazing, incredible women, and they're here for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I can put myself back in there right that moment. Cause I did that. I was just like, remember this moment. This is it. You're done. And I was like, where else could I go? Where was I going to go? What was that was it. Like, and I just knew from there, like I had to figure out what was next because the magazine situation was so sad and struggling. Instead of bringing everybody in and talking about how much more we sold, I was, I'd be called in every 6 months and told to fire 5 people. Mm-hmm. And it was just horrible. And I was like, you know what? This is it. So where else can I go? This is, we're kind of at a dead end here. I'll stay with Moore as long as it goes. And, I thought we would have a longer runway. We kicked it into high gear. We kicked it into competing with Elle and Vogue, but we didn't have the company to support that.
Mm-hmm. One of the questions I often ask as in the lightning round is like, name a memorable office moment, but I feel like you couldn't top that.
That was the height of my career. And there were many other things. I got to meditate in the White House. I got to, they're just like, I can't even tell you the craziest. I can't even remember all the things I did, but
right.
I'm like an ordinary, even the girl next door who got really lucky and could do all these things. And that's kind of what makes me sad about magazines is that we don't have that anymore. So I try to make Covey Club the live version of that experience. We're a bunch of really accomplished, but real people. Right. And, no, we're not having big events in the museum. Do I miss those things? Yeah, a little bit, but I like working deeply with women. I like working in this small space. I like that. I like when people send me a note and they say, you've changed my life. I thought mm-hmm. I was, I thought I was done after my divorce. I didn't know where I was going. I was lost. I met all these incredible women, they helped me get to where I'm going, and I couldn't have done it without Covey Club. And I'm like, and I made this thing up. Like nobody gave it to me. I made it up. Like, which is really shocking that you can do that. So no, I'm not standing, I'm not at the museum with Mrs. Obama yet.
But you're much more comfortable also.
I'm much more comfortable. I don't have to take makeup off my face every day. And, it's wonderful to work deeply with women who are in transition. And, I was very lucky in my career. I mean, it's not like I didn't earn it. I earned a lot of it, but I did have a lot of people who helped me. Not mm-hmm. obviously, I can't say I had any mentors. There were people who mentored me in little bits and, here and there would give me I didn't have any like big mentors who like spent time and actually worked with me on anything. But I got to where I am because there were people who listened to me and thought I was good and gave me a chance. And that's the whole game. So how do I do that for other women? How do we get other women who need to go further, who want to go further, who need that, that sort of movement across a small river that's erupted in their lives? How do we do that? And we can totally. Do that. Yeah.
Well, thank you for everything you do. Say the name of your podcast again so our listeners can also
come to the podcast. Yes, it's Reinvent Yourself with Leslie Jane Seymour, and you can find it on Apple or everywhere. And then, of course, Covey Club, come join us. Come join and meet the great women who will help you figure out what's next.
Absolutely. Check it out. And are you on social? Do you like people to follow you, connect with you on LinkedIn?
Yes,
find you?
Yes, we have Covey Club on Instagram. I'm on Instagram too, Leslie J. Seymour, and it's Lesley. I'm not all that active just because I get so busy, but Covey Club is definitely there. Follow us on LinkedIn. I have a nice LinkedIn letter under my name. Really the get on the newsletter for the Covey Club and you'll see all the great things we do. You don't have to join. You can just come and take a class, see what you think. But if you do want to feel really connected and supported, the thing to do is join.
Fabulous. Well, congratulations on your journey. I so enjoyed meeting you and talking
yes,
to you.
Me too.
And I appreciate your time. And I hope our paths cross again soon.
I'm bringing you to New Orleans.
Okay. Yeah. I'm like, see you there. I'll see you in New Orleans. You will be hearing from me.
Good. All right, Julie. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You've been listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hochheiser Ilkovich. Thank you to our incredible producer, Liz Roberts, and the amazing team that works on this podcast. Chelsea Orcutt, Chrisanne Grisey, Mandy Carr, Alex Fetter, who wrote our original theme music, and all of the wonderful volunteers on the podcast committee. A special thank you to Donna Jean Plant and everyone at New York Wiki who supports us. For more information about New York Women in Communications, including how to join and all about upcoming events, go to nywiki.org. That's nywici.org. And please take a moment to rate and review our show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.